Okay, and welcome back. It's a Bill Tompkins night. Hour two of our conversation coming up now. Covered a lot of ground already. Remarkable things. Just remember, when you look up at night, 200 billion Milky Way style galaxies are up there. And each one of them has billions of stars. Let's get right back to our conversation with Bill Tompkins and pick it up and move on. So go ahead, Bill.
Okay. Where I was trying to get to there was essentially that all of this effort that's taking place, this thrust into space by the United States, it all stopped. And the money stopped. And it was a shock, not just to the public, but to every financial organization in the country. And so to step back and relook at, like other companies did, for instance, North American going ahead with the commercial operations out there, and other countries did too. Boeing Company developed a program out there. So what we're seeing is that we learned a great deal with Apollo, and then we stopped. And essentially, it's hard to believe, but the rest of the planet didn't go back either. And the control that the extraterrestrials had over the moon was a shock to everybody. And we're in the position then of where the program, the thrust, all of the engineering, all the designs, all the companies, the subcontractors, all these people, all the universities, which had contracts in support of different elements commercial space program. All these people stopped. And essentially, with the exception of some of the aerospace commercial efforts, we never went back. And so the thrust, which was begun to this day, hasn't been picked up. It hasn't been reorganized.
No.
It hasn't been implemented. And getting back to this situation where we have this 200 billion galaxies and billions of stars in just our own galaxy, where other people are operating out there. Other civilizations are operating.
Yeah, there, a lot of them are operating here, too.
And they're operating here, too. And so this effort is like essentially working with the Nordics and other people that they work with to continue what would be really the commercial aspects of us penetrating space with them. And so the approach now is to forget about the moon, go ahead and develop the systems and work with the commercial and work with the, I guess, the white hat extraterrestrials.
Yeah, you know, if I might say another thing about our solar system, it is becoming more and more embarrassing and maddening to watch NASA release images taken by Curiosity, and I think one of the other rovers is still going, that are clearly smudged out, covered over with just a big smear or otherwise put into soft focus, colors are changed. They're hiding so much in these pictures, and it should make people angry. And a lot of people are angry about it. There are many videos out, you know, on YouTube showing Mars structures that are obviously in pieces now. Something happened up there that was real bad and real ugly and blew the hell out of a whole civilization. There are pieces of intelligently created, we'll say, buildings. Who knows what they were? All over the place. All over the place. And they have to, in some of the pictures, literally smudge out 30, 40% of the picture with just a smear. It's gone. It's not there. These aren't pixels. It's been smeared out. They're hiding things. It's pretty obvious, Bill, that Mars is a fascinating place.
No question. And your point about the covering up of the documents, everything that, every photograph that was taken on the moon, 95% of those photographs were, never prevented to, the public to even see them.
Oh, that many. Wow.
And that the facilities that are there, where there's like clear photographs of mile-high rectangular glass buildings.
I've seen one or two of those in years gone by.
Yeah, floating roughly 2 miles above the surface.
Now, I didn't see that. I saw the kind that were anchored to the surface. But these are, wow.
These are floating above the surface, like 2 miles above surface, just floating. And this whole thing like that you're talking about, of the cover-up of this, it's insanity because if more people could be exposed to the reality of what's taken place, I think we could have more people working in this, more people joining the effort, more people helping to work with other extraterrestrials and get rid of this ridiculous
thing. It would electrify the planet. It would change everything. The money makers and money grubbers would still make their money, but people would all of a sudden have a vision which has been taken away from them. They now no longer have much vision. They walk around with their heads down, staring at their smartphones, etc. If we can, I have another request from Frank, and thank you, Frank Chile, for putting this together, and hello to George Filer. Frank is saying, can we possibly get Bill to tell us about the Navy facility at Mount San Jacinto above Palm Springs and your trips there? You've been in such amazing places. Is that something you could do for us?
Well, actually, I have not been in the facility. I've talked to numbers of people who have.
Yeah.
And,
but you've been there. You've been to the place. I mean,
you've
been to Palm Springs, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you would get a telephone call, and that would be, we'd get together at Palm Springs on the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And so we're driving down there, and we're halfway there, and you would see a UFO. And it wouldn't be really visible. It would just show up for a short period of time, and it'd be gone. And so now you're more enthused. You keep on driving down. You meet the fellas over at one of the hotels, and we're supposed to take the tram up to the top of the ski lodge.
Yeah.
So everybody gets into the tram, and sometimes it's in the winter time, and there's snow all over. But in the spring and the summer, there's no snow at all.
That must be an amazing ride up that tram. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun. And so we get up there to meet these people and to go into the facility, and we go around the big lobby area and go into what looks like another door into some offices, and then down a real long hallway. We get on an elevator and we go back down into the mountain. We get to an area that is essentially like another lobby type things with several other rooms and another hallway.
Hmm.
But the young lady that has her face to you behind her stand said that we have to wait there. So with me, I was two other fellows, and we met three other people to go talk to these fellows. We got that far, and we never got in. So I never got into the facility, which is essentially, it's on the northwest side of the mountain, which is the opposite side from where the ski lift comes up to the top of the mountain for the skiers. And so we got that far, but we were not allowed to go on in.
Really?
So our meeting,
This doesn't sound very cordial. Why were you kept out?
Okay.
You're down there. You know you're in a secret underground facility of some kind, but no one comes to meet you and welcome you. And what were you supposed to be there to talk about? Can you share that?
Yes, they were. We were to discuss several communication systems, which would have been with extraterrestrials, and who have dozens of facilities all over the western states here. And that just happens to be one of theirs that I was not knowledgeable of. And but two of the people that I were working with had been there, discussed it, and we were to set up meetings with them. And with my personal, I didn't get into it. So I'm really the wrong guy for to try to tell you about the inside of the facility. That's as far as we got.
Huh.
And what did the
woman tell you? I'm sorry you won't be able to be in the meeting today.
They used sort of what we thought was nothing but an excuse that the people we were supposed to meet had to leave. And so they were not the ones that we were supposed to see.
I see.
We knew that was a bunch of baloney. Whatever it was, somebody got cold feet, and we did not get in. Now, other people did get in, okay? And this was a very large facility from what they had said.
Huh.
Now, this facility was tied in with another much larger in-mountain underground facility, which is directly west of the area between China Lake and the Air Force Test Area, out on Highway 395 on the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And this facility, then, is primarily an extraterrestrial facility that personnel from other companies are working with Nordic extraterrestrials and also reptilians. And so there's a tunnel which runs from the Palm Springs Mountain directly to this other mountain that's just west of
China Lake
Air Force facility out on the desert. And that's one of the largest ones. Now,
yeah, China Lake is a naval facility, is it not?
Well, see, that's what I was trying to get into before. Essentially, China Lake was put out as a facility to test aircraft and missiles.
Right.
As a missile test range.
Right.
What it really was, an enormous underground facility, which then also took what was literally hundreds of documents that the operatives brought back from different parts of Germany on the extraterrestrial involvement in their weapon systems,
so that,
their propulsion.
That's where that data went. Okay.
And so this went underground at China Lake, and it is still the largest research facility in the United States on extraterrestrial. Because we have our people, Navy people, research people, companies from all the aerospace, all of biomedical research, working underground at China Lake. And so when we did the tunnel studies at Douglas in the secret think tank, we started with a tunnel that went from the Pentagon to the Air Force facility. And obviously it didn't do just that. It stopped at China Lake first. Then it went to the Air Force facility, and then it went to the Air Force's missile launch facility on the coast over California.
At Vandenberg.
And so these different tunnels to these different facilities, some of which the extraterrestrials have built and been operating for thousands of years on this planet, are essentially, we are working with them mm-hmm. on different research.
Hmm.
And so I know that people are saying that doesn't exist. It really does exist. And the tunnels underneath the ground,
mm-hmm.
the extraterrestrials have tunnels that are almost four times the size as the tunnels that we built.
Huh.
You talked about the photograph of the Air Force tunnel drilling machine.
Yeah.
And remember, we had to disassemble that and take it up to the moon to drill underneath the moon to find the caverns mm-hmm. for our base.
Mm-hmm.
That was all part of the engineering of the Apollo Phase 2 program.
Wow.
And so tunnels was an old thing to us.
Mm-hmm.
The size of the caverns on the planet, they're not just in the United States. They're probably on every country on the planet.
Uh-huh.
And so different extraterrestrials have been utilizing these facilities for some of them for thousands of years.
Uh-huh.
And like, uh-huh. With, say, Lockheed. Lockheed has a young man who is handling some programs for Lockheed. And, he's really not doing that because he's a 5.5-foot humanoid type of extraterrestrial.
Huh.
He's not Nordic. He's a different species. He has a family here. His wife goes shopping.
Is she also E.T.?
Yes, she is, and the uh-huh. children are ETs.
Uh-huh.
And this fellow is performing a extraterrestrial mission here, which they simply are using Lockheed facilities.
So did you meet this man?
No, I didn't, but I know two of the people that have met him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got some information from Frank, which correlated what I knew. And so this individual, then, is not an advisor to Lockheed. He's doing his thing. They're letting him use this facility underground, where his offices are. And, but they act just like humans. They're here. They're only a little bit different, so you can't even pick them out, except they're not quite as tall.
Right.
And what I'm trying to say is that sort of thing has been going on since actually the 50s.
One wonders, Bill, what we could contribute by working with the Nordics or the reptilians or whomever, what would this primitive species have to offer them in terms of research? And do we have similar brains at this stage in environmental and in the whole development of bioorganisms? This is a 4.5 billion year old planet. These people, what are they, 1,000 years ahead of us, 500, 200? And are we able to make contributions to their research? It sounds like we're doing something with them from what you're saying.
Well, actually, the human species, if being allowed to, and I think this is very important for anybody that's listening to this, essentially, even from the think tank at Douglas, and definitely from the different laboratories at TRW Space Systems in Redondo Beach, okay, they have been working with different extraterrestrials, actually in TRW. And these fellas are humanoid-type people, almost identical to us.
Uh-huh.
They have their agendas, and like Lockheed, they were allowed to participate in some of what the different laboratories were studying at TRW.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at. Is there some way to establish mental parity with ETs that we could combine our brain and theirs in terms of research and get anything accomplished? I mean, you would think of an ET as being so far ahead of us that there would be no hope.
That has been going now for some 40 years, okay?
Right.
So our learning curve being controlled by the... essentially, by Draco's reducing our mental capability to about 95%.
So the reptilians are reducing our mental capabilities. Are others enhancing our mental capabilities? It is said we have far more brain power than we on average access.
Well, the number is 2.3% is all you're using. And... this is because, essentially, you're smoking their pot because they dropped this stuff on all of us. And some people's brains react to it and don't accept it, don't accept the gases. The human species that are on this planet have an unbelievable brain capability to accomplish unbelievable things.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not being allowed to use that brain.
Interesting. You say the Draco reptilians are the ones keeping us back from utilizing far more of our intellectual prowess than we are.
Yes. Now, the Nordics, on the other hand, are pushing you all the time. The difficulty is that the Nordic naval battle groups are, like we said before, if we have 10 of them, they have 50 of them. So it's like a numbers game.
We have 10, who's we, and who's they that have 50? If we have 10, they have 50. The reptilians have 50 to our 10?
Yes. And so... when we talk about Solar Warden, actually the number there is 8, but I just used the word 10.
Okay, that's fine.
But what we're trying to say is that for the Nordics to get through the block and get through the block that is located around the solar system.
Okay.
And they have to essentially go in underneath the table. Okay.
So they have to sneak in, the reptilians have kind of blocked off our solar system. Obviously, it's not terribly hard for the Nordics to get in, or they would be destroyed. So they get in. Where they have some stealth technology, whatever, and they get here, and now they're trying to help us advance intellectually. What are the tools that the Nordics use? You mentioned that the reptilians are dropping gas in the atmosphere and we're all inhaling it, and it is stunting us or regressing us. What are the Nordics doing? What is their technology like that is used to enhance human intellect?
Okay, they're doing exactly what the three did at the Douglas Apollo program. They don't have the masses to come here and teach everybody, but they are taking individuals, they are taking people, and telepathically assisting them technically.
Mm-hmm.
And so... this is not a hard thing to do, but if you don't have numbers, it becomes a major task.
I understand. It's a one-on-one kind of a thing, or relatively speaking, instead of a mass gassing, so to speak, that does retard the brain process. And boy, can we see that in our society now. We're going the wrong way. I don't want to blame the reptilians always, but... it wouldn't surprise me. Something's up. Something's up. Let me ask you a question. When I was a youngster, I was 12, somebody came to my high school, and I was called to the office. And the secretary there said, hello, and thank you for coming to the office. There's a man here, Professor such and such, who wants to talk to you. And I said, not much, because I was kind of shy at 12. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, well, here he is, and follow us. We're going to go down the hall. And so she led the way. I walked, and this man walked behind me. And I noticed he was very tall, very thin, had little thin mouth, kind of thin eyes, horizontally thin, and aquiline nose, and had black horn-rimmed glasses on, and had a briefcase. And he must have been 6'3", 6'4", which is quite tall. Anyway, we went in a room, and she said, okay, thank you very much, Jeffrey, and Dr. Such and Such will talk to you. I don't know how long we were in that room. He asked me an awful lot of questions. A lot.
Like, what kind of a question?
He had a yellow legal pad, and he was writing. And he wrote and wrote and wrote when I would talk. Questions like, what do you see yourself doing in life later on? And I'm 12 years old. I didn't even think about that. And I said, without thinking, I see myself talking to a lot of people, trying to help them with their lives and to live better lives. And I remember that quote, and because I don't know where it came from, he wrote that down, and then he said, and what, this is at the end of, I don't know how long, 2 hours? He said, what do you want to be remembered for? That was the last question he asked me. And I won't tell you what I said, but it was a very strange meeting. I have no idea who this fellow was or what he came from, where he came from. But I've always had the feeling I've been watched my whole life. And I just wanted to ask you if this had anything to do with anything you're familiar with, because you're familiar with a lot of very eccentric material.
Okay, let me just say that that's happening all the time. And that individual probably was a Nordic, and for whatever reason, you had been selected. And he did implant information into your head telepathically during the time that you talked with him.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me, because I don't remember the time we sat there. I mean, I wasn't unconscious, but it was kind of just wiped, except for the last two or three questions. It was strange.
I think that if we could do it, I'd like to talk about another person who had essentially the same type of thing happen to him.
Sure.
And I'm going to do this, and I want you to think about your experience.
All right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, this fellow, his name is Joe Papp, and he's from one of the European Eastern countries.
Okay.
And he came over to the United States, in the 60s. And he had an approach which could be used by Detroit, which would not require the use of gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took this approach, and he went to Detroit, and he tried to talk to different companies. He just kept trying to go to different automobile companies with his proposal. He left Detroit, and he came out to LAX. And this was like 69, 68
mm-hmm.
Time period.
Mm-hmm.
And he got enough publicity that Northrop, Lockheed, Douglas, TRW, most of the aerospace companies and some of the advanced research, medical research people came to a parking lot at one of the smaller facilities in the LAX airport area. So he had a demonstration, and he had a four-cylinder Crosley engine, and what he was going to do was to show he could run it without having to put gasoline into the to the tank. And so the fellow from, my understanding it was Caltech, but I've heard more recently it was JPL. But anyway, he didn't believe Joe Papp was doing what he was said he was doing, because Joe Papp had a instrument box to control the engine, and he had that plugged in to electrical power in an outlet next to a building in the parking lot. So this fellow came over to Joe and said some profanity, "You're not doing what you're saying." And he went over to pull the plug, and Joe had sort of a fight with him, and the guy managed to pull the plug. Well, the engine went, the engine blew up, and it blew a 4-inch hole in the stomach of the TRW propulsion system's assistant section chief. And so we were all standing at a chain link fence watching this, and so he just sort of sank down, and of course it killed him.
You were there, and you saw all this.
Yes. And so I turned my report in, and there was a couple of other fellows from TRW there, too. And so I made the suggestion that we try to get a hold of Joe Papp, and I went myself to security at TRW, and I said, I have a man that's got to be protected, and we took him and all of his stuff and over to one of the labs at TRW, Redondo Beach, and then we got a hold of his wife, and the guy that was the head of security was an ex-FBI guy, and real smart guy. And so he set up what was essentially a protection type thing for Joe Papp and his wife, and I think the other, his son. And they set up a place which they could live. And so we had Joe Papp for a little less than 3 years. And, oh, I forgot to tell you. One of a friend of mine, Beth Yardavieu, was staffed for the job of studying Joe Papp and what he could do. So I didn't run the show, but he did, and I did help getting other labs to come in at different times and witness different studies. And essentially, we took every type of internal combustion engine you could think of, all the way up to big diesel ship engines and diesel railroad engines, and every type. And so we tested his system on all these different engines, and we came to the conclusion that what he was saying was correct, and that the system really worked, which essentially would, you just put H2O, you put water in the tank, and essentially put, if it's 6 cylinder, essentially it puts 6 aspirin in the carburetor, whatever, and you could get 100,000 miles out of it.
Now, hold on, Bill. Let me do this for our listeners. I remember the name Joe Papp. I've heard about him before. He was a free energy guy. This goes back. Let me read one little thing here about Joe. This is very interesting, and I think it'll help all of our listeners focus in on this even more. You were there? This is really astonishing. In 1967, Joseph Papp built a modified Volvo engine, 1967, to run on a sealed charge of noble gases in the cylinders. It was publicly demonstrated in Los Angeles in 1968, a year later. The engine controls were run on 110 VAC wall current through an extension cord. Richard Feynman attended, very famous physicist, and pulled the plug. The engine continued to run for several minutes but began running rough. Papp took away the plug from Feynman and plugged it back in. But the engine exploded. One person was killed. Feynman accused Papp of using explosives to deliberately destroy the engine to keep the supposed hoax alive. Papp sued Feynman and Caltech, and Caltech settled out of court in Papp's favor. If explosives were used, Caltech would never have settled out of court. Joe Papp died in 1989. Tell us more. We have just a few minutes left. This is remarkable.
Okay, so almost 3 years was spent proving the system. And we set up, I forget, like 4 or 5 different companies, which would be subsidiaries of TRW, to handle different types of clients that would be using truck engines,
yes,
diesel locomotives, yes, ship engines, and all this type of thing. We were setting up companies. We were organizing companies to do this. And I forgot to tell you, they made me manager of this, okay? And this other fellow had other things to do, so I sort of took over after most of it was done at the end of it.
Right.
And so the Joe Papp engine system. And so I come in Monday morning, and I have these green sheets on all the different programs I'm working on, studies. And so then I have all the green sheets for the Joe Papp companies now that we were going to be utilizing this for.
Mm-hmm.
And my green sheets are like 20 pages normally. And one page comes out Monday morning. I go to my boss. He said, well, you got to go talk to president. So I call the president's office, and because I'd never met him. And the girl said on on the phone after she gave me his secretary. She said, can you make it in about 10 minutes, Bill? I don't know her. She doesn't know me, I didn't think, anyway. And so all I had to do was go over to the other building from my office. So I could do it in 10 minutes. So anyway, I go up there, and I'm waiting and waiting. And then he comes out, greets me, and we go in his office. And, of course, I tell him what I want to know what the hell's going. And he said, we can't do anything about it, Bill. They own 53%. Who owns 53%?
Exactly.
The oil companies.
Oh, my.
Now, the same thing. Wait a minute. I'm not finished here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this other fellow, a sweet guy, that's the head of security at TRW. That's probably...
Todd, please turn the music off. We're going to have to continue. Go ahead, Bill.
This situation was to the level of free energy. Okay? Now, the guy that's director of security at TRW One Space Park, Redondo Beach, he takes me to the side and he said, Bill, you're number 30. 30 of what? 30 different systems have been developed and proven to work, which require no gasoline, no oil, since World War II.
Well, you can see why they terrorized poor Joe Papp in Detroit. He threatened the entire industry, the petroleum industry, the auto industry, all the automobile subcontractors, everything.
Wow. Anyway, I just have to say, I quit TRW. I resigned. A whole bunch of other people resigned because this was the last straw with them. They knew about all these other systems. I didn't know all the other systems that had been removed.
So many.
But actually, Grumman, like I said before, a few years later, Grumman bought TRW. And all the space system stuff, all the advanced medical systems, they bought the extended life system, the whole ball of wax, Northrop did, with no Detroit involved, period.
Now this is Northrop, who bought it, Northrop or Grumman?
Northrop Grumman.
Northrop Grumman bought it, okay. All right. Now, we're just about out of time, Bill, for this visit. But what should I have learned from this vis-a-vis my experience with the strange man who talked to me?
The thing is that he was, and when he talked about how he learned this, he had this tall man.
Oh.
And he had two tall girls. They were beautiful people, three people, told him to leave Europe, go to the United States, implement this. Wow.
That's
wow.
Pretty amazing story. All right, we're going to pick this up next time, Bill, and carry on from where we are. Joe Papp story was remarkable, and there was a tall man in his life, too.
Mm. Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank
almost
you.
Almost exactly like you.
Well, nothing would surprise me. We'll talk more about this next visit, Bill. Thank you very much for being here again.
Thank you. My privilege.
You take care. All right. Good night.
Right.
Mr. Bill Tompkins, our latest conversation, and we always learn things when Bill is around. Amazing. It's quite a story about Joe Papp and his tall man. All right, we'll look into that more next time. Back in a few minutes. Hang on.